This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts on health tech in CW 24 and 25. Frenes equips health tech providers with the market intelligence to identify which hospitals to target and how to reach decision makers for hospital digitalization as a result of the Krankenhaus Zukunftsgesetz. You can find more info in the description.
Exactly, yeah.
So, welcome to the deep dive, everyone. We are really glad you're here with us. Over the next few minutes, we're going to explore the top health tech trends that have just been dominating the conversation on LinkedIn over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a really busy couple of weeks on the timeline. Lots of debate.
Oh, for sure. We've curated the most vital insights from leaders across the space. So we'll be looking at everything from, you know, AI integration to the really gritty, unglamorous realities of medical device adoption. So, okay, let's unpack this, starting with what seems to be the biggest wake-up call in the industry right now, which is that AI adoption in healthcare has officially shifted from those shiny experimental tech demos to the actual messy reality of hospital operations.
Yeah, and we are actually seeing that shift reflected at the very earliest stages of company building. Look at the data. Sol García-Hurtes did a really fascinating analysis of the latest Y Combinator batch.
Oh, the healthcare startups.
Right, the healthcare startups. And given the whole hype cycle around generative AI, you'd probably assume every founder is trying to build, like, the ultimate AI doctor, right?
Right, like a neural network that just replaces human clinical reasoning entirely.
Exactly. But the signal is pointing in the exact opposite direction. Mm. The most crowded cluster of startups isn't focusing on patient-facing diagnostics at all.
No, they're building B2B autonomous agents for the least glamorous parts of healthcare.
Yes. Operations.
We're talking referrals, fax intake, scheduling, prior authorizations, revenue cycle management.
Which is incredibly smart when you think about the architecture of modern medicine. I mean, healthcare is essentially this ecosystem of fragmented systems relying on manual handoffs and, you know, unstructured documents.
Right. Somebody literally printing a PDF and faxing it.
Exactly. So agentic systems can create massive, measurable ROI just by automating that administrative burden. They're capturing value in the operational layer long before they even touch the highly sensitive, regulated question of clinical reasoning.
That makes perfect sense, especially when you look at the track record of clinical tools that fail. Like Dr. Vinyan Masangi shared a pretty stark reality check on this recently.
Yeah, I saw that.
He pointed out that AI in hospitals is basically doomed to fail unless clinicians are helping map the workflows from day one. I mean, he sees these brilliant engineers building tools with solid algorithms, clean UIs, and then nobody uses them.
Because it doesn't fit the actual job.
Exactly. Not because the tech is flawed, but because nobody designed a ward round into the product workflow. And so it's like so many of these startups have brilliant engineers, but as Dr. Masangi asks, who in your team has done a ward round?
Such a good question.
Right. If we're building cutting-edge tech that a nurse literally doesn't have time to open during a 12-hour shift, aren't we just building a sports car for a dirt road?
Wow. Yeah, that sports car analogy is spot on. What's fascinating here is that we consistently confuse a technology problem with an implementation problem.
Yes.
Prudhomme-Paul articulated this translation gap brilliantly. He noted that AI tools that perform perfectly in a, you know, a controlled testing environment, they often just fall apart the second they meet a different patient population or some unfamiliar EHR workflow.
The dreaded EHR integration.
The last mile of integration is everything. Without it, instead of the AI managing the workload, the clinician ends up managing the AI.
Ah. Which is the worst case scenario.
Exactly. It generates alert fatigue. It creates more manual data entry.
I've always compared this to the history of electronic medical records. Like Vivek Arora pointed out that workflow mismatch is the exact same reason EMR go-lives have historically failed.
Oh, absolutely.
It's almost never that the underlying database doesn't work. It's change fatigue. I mean, if users are already overloaded with parallel changes, even a technically perfect system gets rejected because the clinical reality just doesn't align with the assumptions baked into the software.
But, you know, we also have to look at what happens when developers actually get that alignment right.
True.
Because the upside is undeniable. Jeff DeLello shared insights from the 2026 Philips Future Health Index, and they surveyed over 22,000 healthcare professionals globally.
That's a huge sample size.
Massive. And the data shows that when AI is successfully integrated into the workflow, it genuinely works. 36% of U.S. healthcare professionals reported that AI has increased their capacity to see an average of 5 additional patients per week.
5 extra patients a week per provider.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, multiply that across an entire health system, and that is a massive metric.
It fundamentally changes hospital economics. And more importantly, it gives clinicians time back to fulfill the purpose that brought them to medicine in the first place, you know.
Mm.
Sitting with patients, listening, caring.
Right. When the tech is integrated properly, it absorbs friction rather than creating it.
Exactly.
Okay, so integrating AI into the workflow is clearly the first massive hurdle. But let's say you actually get that right. The nurse uses the tool, the hospital adopts it.
You're still not done.
No, you're not at the finish line yet, because keeping it safe, compliant, and unbiased over time seems to be the second major hurdle. And I want to throw a theory at you.
Okay, let's hear it.
I always just assumed HIPAA compliance was essentially a matter of keeping data encrypted at rest and in transit, like a security checkbox you hit right before launch.
Oh, man. That is the exact trap most founders fall into.
Really?
Yeah, and it's why Navaneeth's recent post struck such a chord. He pointed out that HIPAA compliance isn't a feature you just tack on at the end of development. It requires foundational architectural decisions made on day one.
Interesting.
Because it's not just about data storage anymore. It's about how the neural network actually processes that data.
And the regulatory framework around that is surprisingly robust, even if it feels old, right? Larry Trotter added a brilliant perspective to this.
Yeah, you did.
He pointed out that everyone is running around looking for some official, shiny, new, HIPAA-compliant AI certification that just simply doesn't exist.
Right. They want a stamp of approval.
Exactly. But the reality is that the HIPAA security rule is 22 years old, but it already contains the exact controls needed to make AI compliant today. The core principles, data privacy, access control, audit logs, they don't change just because the processing mechanism is a neural network instead of a, you know, relational database.
The foundational security principles might remain the same, sure, but the behavior of the software definitely does not.
Right, yeah.
Unlike a traditional database, an AI model ages the moment it goes live in a dynamic hospital environment. And this brings us to a highly technical reality that Asim Khan broke down regarding AI drift.
This is such a critical concept because AI models, especially in patient monitoring, they're trained on a specific static slice of reality. But hospitals are living, breathing ecosystems.
Exactly. Think of it like calibrating a highly sensitive weather barometer, but then physically moving the house it's sitting in to a totally different altitude.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
The instrument isn't broken, but the baseline reality it was tuned for no longer exists. Khan outlines 4 distinct types of drift we have to watch for. First, there's covariate, or data drift.
Okay, so what does that look like in practice?
Well, maybe a hospital upgrades its physical sensors, or alters a triage workflow, which fundamentally alters the data inputs feeding the algorithm.
Oh, I see. So the AI is suddenly trying to read French when it was trained on Spanish.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Then there's concept drift, which is highly urgent. This is when the fundamental relationship between inputs and outcomes changes.
Give me an example of that.
Imagine a step-down unit suddenly taking on higher acuity patients. The AI's threshold for what constitutes an emergency is now dangerously misaligned.
Right, because the baseline of normal has shifted.
Exactly. Then you have label drift, where the baseline rate of an event changes. The classic example here is a deterioration model trained pre-pandemic. When COVID-19 hit, the overall case mix fundamentally shifted.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And those models struggled to adapt to the new baseline of respiratory failure.
That makes total sense. And finally, there's bias drift, which honestly might be the most insidious of all of them.
Definitely.
This is where the aggregate metrics look perfectly fine on a dashboard, right? But the model is quietly degrading for specific subgroups, whether that's based on age, ethnicity, or care setting.
Which is why you cannot just deploy a model and walk away. Khan argues you need a really robust 3-layer monitoring stack looking at input distributions, unsupervised model behavior, and outcome-based performance tracking.
Okay, but let me push back on that for a second. Okay, but what happens when the AI is perfectly compliant, but it's learning from inherently flawed or opinionated data, like even if you monitor it perfectly?
That blind spot is exactly what Sarah Fuentes Molina highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
We spend millions governing the enterprise AI tools inside hospitals, but almost none on the consumer AI side.
Right.
Consumer generative AI models inherit institutional bias because they treat institutional authority and clinical medical authority as the exact same thing.
Because the algorithm literally doesn't understand context.
Exactly.
She's a great example. So the Cleveland Clinic, obviously a highly trusted brand, they published an article on the pop culture concept of the ick, framing it loosely as a cognitive bias.
Which is, you know, a subjective cultural interpretation.
Exactly. But because it's published under a highly credible institutional banner, an AI will scrape that and present it to a consumer as clinical medical fact. It literally doesn't know the difference between a peer-reviewed double-blind study and a subjective blog post if they share the same URL domain.
So we didn't remove the bias, we just gave it a much more authoritative distribution engine.
Spot on. And speaking of trust, there is a massive blind spot in how we are bringing patients along for this ride. If we look at recent analyses of clinical trials involving AI, the transparency is shockingly low.
Oh yeah, the stats on this are pretty grim.
Alina Schwetz shared a staggering statistic. Researchers analyzed 114 clinical trials with an AI component, and 55% of the consent forms failed to disclose to participants how AI was actually using their data.
Wow, over half.
Over half. If we want patients to trust these systems, hiding the ball in the consent form is just a terrible way to start.
It really is. Transparency is the foundation of clinical trust. But, you know, if governance, transparency, and workflow integration are the main hurdles, we have to look at where the industry is actually clearing them successfully.
Yeah, where is it working?
Because despite all these friction points, there is one clinical domain where AI is undeniably conquering the market right now, and that is imaging and diagnostics.
Oh, absolutely. The numbers on this are wild. Joel Kent analyzed the FDA's Q1 2026 data for AI and machine learning-enabled medical devices. The submissions are massively concentrated.
Like, incredibly skewed.
Radiology had 69 submissions in just one quarter. Cardiovascular was a distant second with 10. Everything else was just in the single digits. Radiology is just completely dominating the AI space.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to ask why radiology has become the beachhead for AI adoption. Dr. Filippo Catamartieri offered a really provocative thought on this.
What did he say?
He argues that we fundamentally misunderstand what a radiologist actually does. Radiology is not an imaging specialty. It is a communication specialty that uses imaging as its medium.
Oh, that's a fascinating distinction. Explain the mechanism there.
So think about the clinical handoff. Patients and referring clinicians don't just need the images, and they don't just need a list of findings. They need decisions.
Right. They need to know what to do next.
Exactly. AI will inevitably read the images faster. It can detect findings, measure lesions, segment anatomy, quantify volume. But those are just mathematical computations. The human radiologist is the one who takes that mathematical uncertainty and translates it into an action plan.
They are the guide.
Yes. The future of the specialty isn't about how many images you can read. It's about how effectively you transform AI's computation into clinical action.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because that traditional, careful clinical approach is colliding head-on with consumer tech ambition.
You definitely.
Joshua Liu posted about Midjourney, you know, the company famous for generative AI images, and they announced they're building an ultrasonic CT for whole-body preventative screening.
Which is quite a pivot.
Huge pivot. Their goal is to put a water immersion scanner using hundreds of thousands of ultrasound transducers into wellness spas, completing a full body scan in 60 seconds. And they want 50,000 of these globally by 2031.
And notice how they are intentionally starting with the term wellness and focusing on body composition.
To bypass the FDA.
Exactly. To bypass heavy FDA diagnostic regulation before eventually moving into diagnostics.
Yes, and the medical community is pushing back hard on this. I mean, from a pure physics standpoint, ultrasound can't see past bone or air, so it's effectively useless for imaging the brain or lungs.
Right.
But more importantly, there are decades of clinical evidence showing the cascading harm of overscreening asymptomatic individuals. If you scan healthy people, you will inevitably find tiny, benign anomalies.
Which leads to unnecessary biopsies.
Exactly. Severe psychological anxiety for the patient, massive costs to the healthcare system. It's a huge issue.
It is the ultimate friction point. Because the tech world views this pushback as the medical establishment stifling innovation.
Yeah.
They just want to build the Star Trek tricorder and iterate their way to massive consumer scale.
Move fast and break things.
Right, but the medical field operates on the mandate of, first, do no harm. Real medical innovation, the kind that actually shifts the standard of care, it requires rigorous evidence-led validation.
Which brings us to what actual rigorous med tech looks like right now. Like, Angie Hulich shared data on a fascinating development called TETCH220.
Oh, I read about this.
It's a deep learning-enhanced protocol that delivers comprehensive whole-brain MRI in under 220 seconds on standard 1.5 Tesla machines.
And let's break down why that matters. By using deep learning to reconstruct the images faster and clearer, they are dramatically cutting down the time a patient spends in the scanner.
Which is critical for acute stroke patients.
Exactly, where the medical mantra is literally, time is brain. Shaving minutes off a scan preserves tissue and saves lives. That is real, clinically implementable innovation that fits perfectly into existing high-stakes hospital workflows.
Right. It's not sitting in a wellness spa. It's in a critical care setting, saving cognitive function.
Exactly.
And we're seeing similar rigorous innovation on the physical device side, too. Ryan Sanford posted about Boston Scientific's real-world adoption of the EluPro bioenvelope at the VA in Gainesville.
Oh, the infection control device.
Yeah. This isn't just a physical pouch for a cardiac implant. It actively elutes antibiotics into the surrounding tissue over a specific time frame.
Wow.
It fundamentally changes the infection risk profile for patients receiving these implants while promoting healing. That kind of breakthrough doesn't come from a consumer marketing playbook.
No, absolutely not.
It comes from robust clinical trials and hard evidence that directly translates into patient outcomes.
It just proves that while the flashy consumer applications get all the headlines, the real foundational shifts in healthcare are happening through meticulous peer-reviewed engineering.
So what does this all mean for the people actually trying to build and sell these technologies? Because we've talked extensively today about the absolute necessity of workflow integration, the technical complexities of monitoring AI drift, and of course, the non-negotiable requirement for hard clinical evidence.
Yeah, it's a massive checklist.
But I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over, courtesy of Adam Torinas. You can have the most elegant engineering in the world. You can have peer-reviewed data proving your device saves lives. You can even have a chief surgeon who absolutely loves your product and champions it in the hospital, and your product will still stall out completely. Why? Because clinical buy-in is not the same thing as commercial buy-in.
Oh, that is a harsh reality. The doctor isn't always the buyer.
No, we are shifting from an era where clinical efficacy drove adoption to an era where IT security and workflow integration possess veto power over clinical efficacy.
That's a great way to put it, veto power.
You aren't just selling medicine anymore. You are selling an enterprise IT integration that happens to do medicine. If you don't map the real buying committee, you know, the administrators, the IT security teams looking at that day one IPAA architecture, the procurement officers analyzing the budget, you will fail.
Solving the algorithm is really only half the battle. If you're building a sports car, you better make sure the hospital actually has a paved road to drive it on and that the CFO is willing to pay the toll.
Exactly. And it always comes back to operational reality. You have to solve for the ecosystem, not just the symptom.
Russell.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on ICT and Tech Insights, Defense Tech, Cloud, Digital Products and Services, Artificial Intelligence and Sustainability, and Green ICT. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the realities of health tech. Keep questioning the algorithms, and don't forget to subscribe.